loaded with nightclubs. Don and I have kept the poor fellow up so many nights that we've had to help him stay awake in language classes. But he'll be all right. Once you reach Eighth Circle, you don't need much sleep. What made you think we never dressed, dear? Ben blurted out his dilemma. Jill looked wide-eyed, barely giggled, stopped at once. I see. Darling, I'm wearing this robe because I have to gobble and get. Had I grokked that was troubling you, I would have chucked it before I said hello. We're so used to dressing or not according to what we do that I forgot that it might not be polite. Sweetheart, wear those shorts, or not, exactly as suits you. Just don't fret. Jill smiled and dimpled. Reminds me of the time Mike tried a public beach. Remember, Don? I'll never forget. Ben, you know how Mike is. I had to teach him everything. He couldn't see any point to clothes until he grokked, to his great surprise, that we aren't invulnerable to weather. Body modesty isn't a Martian concept, couldn't be. Mike grokked clothes as ornaments only after we started experimenting with costuming our acts. But while Mike always did what I told him to, whether he grokked it or not, you can't imagine how many little things there are to being human. We take 20 years or more to learn them. Mike had to learn almost overnight. There are still gaps. He does things not knowing that it isn't how a human behaves. We all teach him. All but Patty, who is sure that anything Michael does is perfect. He's still grokking clothes. He groks there a wrongness that keeps people apart, gets in the way of letting love cause them to grow closer. Lately, he's grokked that you need a barrier with outsiders. But for a long time, Mike wore clothes only when I told him to. And once I failed to tell him. We were in Baja, California. It was when we met, or re-met, Dawn. Mike and I checked in at night at a beach hotel, and he was so anxious to grok the ocean that he let me sleep next morning and went down by himself for his first encounter with the sea. Poor Mike. He got to the beach, threw off his robe, and headed for the water, looking like a Greek god and just as unaware of conventions. And the riot started, and I came awake fast and rushed down to keep him out of jail. Jill got a faraway look. He needs me now. Kiss me goodnight. Ben, I'll see you in the morning.
You'll be gone all night?
Probably. It's a fairly big transition class. She stood up, pulled him to his feet, and went into his arms. Presently, she murmured, Ben, darling, you've been taking lessons.
Phew! Me, I've been utterly faithful to you. In my own way.
The same way I've been to you. I wasn't complaining. I just think Dorcas has been helping you practice kissing.
Some, maybe. Nosy.
The class can wait while you kiss me again. I'll try to be Dorcas.
Be yourself.
I would, anyway. Self. Mike says that Dorcas kisses more thoroughly, groks a kiss more than anyone.
Quit chattering. She did, then sighed.
Transition class, here I come, glowing like a lightning bug. Take care of him, Dawn. I will. And kiss him right away and see what I mean. I intend to. Then be a good boy and do what Dawn tells you. She left, not hurrying, but running.
Dawn flowed up against him, put up her arms.
Jubal cocked an eyebrow. Are you going to tell me that at that point you went chicken?
I didn't have much choice. I, cooperated with the inevitable. Jubal nodded.
You were trapped. Whereupon the best a man can do is try for a negotiated peace.
Chapter 32
Jubal, Caxton said earnestly, I wouldn't say a word about Dawn. I wouldn't tell any of this if it weren't necessary for explaining why I'm worried about them. All of them, Duke and Mike and Dawn, as well as Jill and Mike's other victims. Mike has them fascinated. His new personality is powerful, cocky, and too much super salesman, but very compelling. And Dawn is compelling in her own way. By morning I was lulled into thinking everything was all right. Weird, but jolly.
Ben Caxton awakened, not knowing where he was. It was dark. He was lying on something soft. Not a bed. The night came back in a rush.
The last he clearly remembered was lying on the soft floor of the innermost temple, talking quietly and intimately with Dawn. She had taken him there. They had immersed, shared water, grown closer. Frantically, he groped around, found nothing.
dawn. Light swelled to dimness.
Here, Ben.
Oh, I thought you had gone.
I didn't intend to wake you.
She was wearing, to his sudden disappointment, her robe of office.
I'm gonna start the Sunriser's outer service. Jillian isn't back. As you know, it was a big class.
Her words brought back things she had told him last night, things which had upset him, despite her gentle explanations, and she had soothed him until he found himself agreeing. He still didn't grok it all. But yes, Jill was busy with rites as High Priestess, a task or happy duty that Dawn had offered to take for her. Ben felt that he should be sorry that Jill had refused. But he did not feel sorry.
Dawn, do you have to leave?
He scrambled to his feet, put his arms around her.
I must, Ben, dear. Dear Ben.
She melted against him.
Right now?
There is never, she said softly, that much hurry.
The robe no longer kept them apart. He was too bemused to wonder what had become of it. He woke a second time, found that the little nest lighted when he stood up. He stretched, discovered that he felt wonderful, looked around for his shorts. He tried to recall where he had left them, and had no recollection of taking them off. He had not worn them into the water. Probably beside the pool. He went out and found a bathroom. Some minutes later, shaved, showered, and refreshed, he looked into the innermost temple, failed to find his shorts, and decided that somebody had put them in the foyer where everybody kept streetwear. Said to hell with it, and grinned at himself for having made an issue out of wearing them. He needed them here in the nest, like a second head. He didn't have a trace of a hangover, although he had had more than several drinks with Dawn. Dawn didn't seem affected by liquor, which was probably why he had gone over his quota. Dawn, what a gal. She hadn't even seemed annoyed when, in a moment of emotion, he had called her Jill. She had seemed pleased. He found no one in the big room and wondered what time it was. Not that he gave a damn, but he was hungry. He went into the kitchen to see what he could scrounge. A man looked around.
Ben!
Well, hi, Duke. Duke gave him a bear hug.
Gosh, it's good to see you. Thou art God. How do you like your eggs?
Thou art God. Are you the cook?
Only when I can't avoid it, Tony does most of it. We all do some, even Mike, unless Tony catches him. Mike is the world's worst cook.
Duke went on breaking eggs. Ben moved in. You look after toast and coffee. Any Worcestershire sauce?
You name it, Pat's got it. Here.
Duke added,
I looked in on you a while ago, but you were snoring. I've been busier you have ever since you got here.
What do you do, Duke?
Well, I'm a deacon. I'll be a priest someday. I'm slow. Not that it matters. I study Martian, everybody does. And I'm the fix-it boy, same as for Jubal.
Must take a gang to maintain this place. Ben, you'd be surprised how little it takes. You must see Mike's unique way of dealing with the stopped-up toilet. I don't have to play plumber much. Aside from plumbing, 9/10 of the gadgetry is in this kitchen, and it's not as gadgeted as Jubal's. I thought you had some complicated gadgets for the temples. Lighting controls, that's all.
Actually, Duke grinned, my most important job is no work. Fire warden.
Huh? I'm a deputy fire warden, examined and everything. And same for sanitary and safety inspector. We never have to let an outsider go through the joint. They can attend outer services, but they never get farther, unless Mike gives an upcheck.
They transferred food to plates and sat down. Duke said, you staying, Ben?
I can't, Duke.
So, I just came for a visit, too. Went back and moped for a month before I told Jubal I was leaving.
Never mind, you'll be back.
Don't make any decisions before your water sharing tonight.
Water sharing? Didn't Dawn tell you?
I don't think so.
I should let Mike explain.
No, people will be mentioning it all day. Sharing water, you grok. You're first called.
First called? Dawn used that expression. Those who became Mike's water brother without learning Martian. Others ordinarily do not share water and grow closer until they pass the eighth circle. By then, they are beginning to think in Martian. Shuck, some of them know more Martian than I do. It's not forbidden. Nothing is forbidden to share water with someone who isn't ready for Eighth Circle. Hell, I could pick up a babe in a bar, share water, take her to bed, and then bring her to the temple. But I wouldn't. That's the point. I would never want to. Ben, I'll make a flat-footed prediction. You've been in bed with some fancy babes. Some. I know damn well you have. But you will never again crawl in with one who is not your water brother. A year from now, you tell me. Now Mike may decide that someone is ready. Before reaching even seventh circle, one couple Mike offered water when they entered third circle, and now he's a priest and she's a priestess, Sam and Ruth. Haven't met him. You will. But Mike is the only one who can be certain that soon. Very occasionally Dawn or Patty will spot somebody, but never as far down as third circle, and they always consult Mike. Not that they have to. Anyhow, into eighth circle, and sharing and growing closer starts. Then ninth circle, and the nest itself. And that's the transition service we mean when we say sharing water, even though we share water all day long. The whole nest attends, and the new brother becomes forever part of the nest. In your case, you already are. But we've never held the service, so tonight everything is pushed aside to welcome you. They did the same for me. Ben, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world.
I still don't know what it is, Duke.
It's lots of things. Ever been on a real luau? The kind the cops raid and usually ends in a divorce or two?
Well, yes.
Brother, you've only been on Sunday school picnics. That's one aspect. Have you ever been married?
No.
You are married. After tonight, there will never be any doubt in your mind. Duke looked happily pensive. Ben, I was married before. And at first it was nice. And then it was steady hell. This time I like it all the time. Shucks, I love it. I don't mean just that it's fun to shack up with a bunch of bouncy babes. I love them. All my brothers, both sexes. Take Patty. Patty mothers us. I don't think anybody gets over needing that. She reminds me of Jubal, and that old bastard had better get down here and get the word. My point is that it is not just that Patty is female. Oh, I'm not running down tail. Who is running down tail? A contralto voice interrupted. Duke swung around. Not me, you limber Levantine whore. Come here, babe, and kiss your brother Ben. Never charged for it in my life, the woman denied as she glided toward them. Started giving it away before anybody told me. She kissed Ben carefully and thoroughly. Thou art God, brother.
Thou art God. Share water. Never thirst.
Don't mind Duke. From the way he behaves, he must have been a bottle baby. She kissed Duke even more lingeringly while he patted her ample fundament. She was short, plump, brunette to swarthiness, and had a mane of heavy blue-black hair almost to her waist. Duke, did you see a Ladies' Home Journal when you got up? She took his fork and started eating his scrambled eggs.
Good. You didn't cook these, Duke.
Ben did. Why would I want a Ladies' Home Journal? Ben, stir up a couple of dozen more and I'll scramble them in relays. There's an article I want to show Patty, dear.
Okay, agreed Ben.
Don't get any ideas about redecorating this dump and leave some of that for me. You think us men can do our work on mush? Tut, tut, Dukey darling. Water divided is water multiplied. Ben, Duke's complaints never mean anything. As long as he has enough women for two men and food for three, he's a perfect lamb. She shoved a forkful into Duke's mouth. Quit making faces, brother. I'll cook you a second breakfast. Or will it be your third? Not even the first yet. You ate it. Ruth, I was telling Ben about how you and Sam pole-vaulted to ninth. He's uneasy about the sharing water tonight. She pursued the last bite on Duke's plate, moved over and started preparations to cook. Duke, I'll send you out something other than mush. Take your coffee and skedaddle. Ben, I was worried too. But don't you be, dear. Michael does not make mistakes. You belong here or you wouldn't be here. You're going to stay?
I can't. Ready for the first installment?
Pour them in. You'll be back. Someday you'll stay. Duke is correct. Sam and I pole-vaulted. It was too fast for a middle-aged, prim and proper housewife.
Middle-aged?
Ben, one bonus of the discipline is that as it straightens out your soul, your body straightens out too. That's a matter in which Christian scientists are right. Notice any medicine bottles in the bathrooms?
No,
there aren't any. How many people have kissed you?
Several.
As a priestess, I kiss more than several. but there's never so much as a sniffle in the nest. I used to be the sort of whiny woman who was never quite well and given to female complaints. She smiled. Now I'm more female than ever, but I'm 20 pounds lighter, years younger, and have nothing to complain about. I like being female. As Duke flattered me, 11-teen whore, and unquestionably more limber. I sit in lotus position when I'm teaching, whereas it used to be all I could do just to bend over. But it did happen fast, Ruth went on. Sam was a professor of Oriental languages. He started coming because it was the only way to learn Martian. Strictly professional. He wasn't interested in the church. I went along to keep an eye on him. I was jealous, even more possessive than the average. So we worked up to third circle, Sam learning rapidly and myself grimly studying because I didn't want him out of my sight. Then boom, the miracle happened. We began to think in it, a little. And Michael felt it and had to stay after service one night. And Michael and Jillian gave us water. Afterwards I knew that I was all the things I despised in other women, and I despised my husband for letting me, and hated him for what he had done. All this in English, with the worst parts in Hebrew. So I wept and moaned and made myself a stinking nuisance to Sam, and couldn't wait to share and grow closer again. After that things were easier, but not easy as we were pushed through the circles as fast as possible. Michael knew we needed help and wanted to get us into the safety of the nest. When it came time for our sharing water, I was still unable to discipline myself without help. I wanted to enter the nest, but wasn't sure I could merge with 7 other people. I was scared silly. On the way over, I almost begged Sam to turn around and go home. She looked up, unsmiling but beatific, a plump angel with a big spoon in one hand. We walked into the innermost temple and a spotlight hit me, and our robes were whisked away. And they were in the pool calling to us in Martian to come share the water of life. And I stumbled in and submerged, and haven't come up since. Nor ever want to. Don't fret, Ben. You'll learn the language and acquire the discipline, and you'll have loving help all the way. You jump in that pool tonight. I'll have my arms out to catch you. All of us will, welcoming you home. Take this to Duke and tell him I said he was a pig, but a charming one, and take this for yourself. Oh, you can eat that much. Give me a kiss and run along. Ruthie has work to do. Ben delivered the kiss, the message, and the plate. He found Jill, apparently asleep on one of the couches. He sat down facing her, enjoying the sweet sight and thinking that Dawn and Jill were more alike than he had realized. Jill's tan was unmarked, and just the shade of Dawn's. Their proportions were identical. In rest, even their features were more alike. He looked up from a bite and saw that her eyes had opened. She was smiling.
Thou art God, darling,
and that smells good.
You look good. I didn't mean to wake you.
He moved across and sat by her, put a bite into her mouth.
My own cooking, with Ruth's help.
And good, too. You didn't wake me. I was just lazing until you came out. I haven't been asleep all night.
Not at all.
Not a wink. But I feel grand, just hungry. That's a hint.
So he fed her.
She let him do so, not stirring. Did you get any sleep? She asked presently.
Some.
How much sleep did Dawn get? As much as 2 hours?
Oh, more than that.
Then she's all right. 2 hours does as much as 8 used to. I knew what a sweet night you were going to have, both of you, but I was worried that she might not rest.
Well, it was a wonderful night, Ben admitted. Although I was, surprised at the way you shoved her at me.
Shocked, you mean? I know you, Ben. I was tempted to spend the night with you myself. I wanted to, dear. But you arrived with jealousy sticking out in lumps. I think it's gone now. Yes?
I think so. Thou art God.
I had a wonderful night, too. Free from worry by knowing you were in good hands. The best hands. Better than mine.
Oh, never, Jill.
So? I grok a few lumps still, but we'll wash them away.
She sat up, touched his cheek, said soberly,
Before tonight, dear, because of all my beloved brothers, I would not have your sharing water be less than perfect.
Ben stopped.
Waiting is, she said, and reached toward the end of the couch. It looked to Caxton as if a pack of cigarettes jumped into her hand.
Glad to change the subject, he said. You've picked up some sleight of hand, too.
Jill smiled. Nothing much. I am only an egg, to quote my teacher.
How did you do that?
Why, I whistled to it in Martian. First you grok a thing, then you grok what you want it to.
Mike,
she waved. We're over here, dear.
Coming.
The man from Mars came straight to Ben, pulled him to his feet.
Let me look at you, Ben. Golly, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you,
and to be here. What's this about 3 days? 3 days indeed.
I'm a working man, Mike.
We'll see. The girls are all excited getting ready for your welcome tonight. Might just as well shut down. They won't be worth a damn.
Patty is rescheduled,
Jill told Mike.
Dawn and Ruth and Sam are taking care of what's necessary. Patty sloughed the matinee, so you're through for the day.
That's good news.
Mike sat down, pulled Jill's head into his lap, pulled Ben down, put an arm around him, and sighed.
He was dressed as Ben had seen him in the outer meeting, smart tropical business suit.
Ben, don't take up preaching. I spend night and day rushing from one job to another telling people why they must never hurry. I owe you, along with Jill and Jubal, more than anyone on this planet. Yet this is the first time I've been able to say hello. Have you been? You're looking fit. Dawn tells me you are fit.
Ben found himself blushing.
I'm okay. That's good. Carnivores will be on the prowl tonight. I'll grok close and sustain you. You'll be fresher at the end than at the start. Won't he, little brother?
Yes,
agreed Jill.
Ben, Mike can lend you strength. Physical strength, not just moral support. I can do it a little.
Mike can really do it.
Jill can do it a lot.
Mike caressed her.
Little brother is a tower of strength to everybody. Last night she certainly was.
He smiled down at her, then sang.
You'll never find a girl like Jill, no, not one in a billion. Of all the tarts who ever will, the willingest is our Jillian. Isn't that right, little brother?
Pooh,
answered Jill, obviously pleased, covering his hand and pressing it to her.
Dawn is exactly like me, and every bit as willing.
But Dawn is downstairs interviewing the possibles out of the tip. She's busy. You ain't. That's an important difference. Isn't it, Ben?
Could be.
Caxton was finding their behavior embarrassing, even in this relaxed atmosphere. He wished that they would knock off necking or give him an excuse to leave. Mike went on cuddling Jill while keeping an arm around Ben's waist. And Ben was forced to admit that Jill encouraged him. Mike said very seriously,
Ben, a night like last night, helping a group to make the big jump to Eighth Circle gets me terribly keyed up. Let me tell you something out of the lessons for Sixth. We humans have something that my former people don't even dream of. I must tell you how precious it is, especially how precious I know it to be, because I have known what it is not to have it. The blessing of being male and female. Man and woman created he them, the greatest treasure we who are God ever invented. Jill?
Beautifully right, Mike. And Ben knows it is truth. But make a song for Dawn, too, darling.
Okay. Ardent is our lovely Dawn. Ben grokked that in her glance. She buys new dresses every morn, but never shops for pants. Okay.
Jill giggled.
Did you turn her in?
Yes, and she gave me a Bronx cheer with a kiss behind it for Ben. Say, isn't there anybody in the kitchen? I just remembered I haven't eaten for a couple of days, or years, maybe.
I think Ruth is, Ben said, trying to stand up.
Mike pulled him down.
Hey, Duke, see if you can find somebody who'll fix me a stack of wheat cakes as tall as you are and a gallon of maple syrup.
Sure, Duke answered. I'll do it myself.
I'm not that hungry. Find Tony. Or Ruth.
Mike pulled Ben closer and said,
Ben, I grok that you are not entirely happy.
Huh? Oh, I'm all right.
Mike looked into his eyes.
I wish you knew the language, Ben. I can feel your uneasiness, but I can't see your thoughts.
Mike?
Jill said. The man from Mars looked at her, then looked back at Ben and said slowly,
Jill just now told me your trouble, Ben. And it's a thing I've never been able to grok in fullness.
He looked worried and hesitated almost as long as when he was learning English.
But I grok that we can't hold your sharing water tonight. Waiting is.
Mike shook his head.
I'm sorry, but waiting will fill.
Jill sat up.
No, Mike. We can't let Ben leave without it. Not Ben.
I do not grok it, little brother, Mike said reluctantly. A long pause followed, silence more tense than speech. At last Mike said doubtfully to Jill,
You speak rightly?
You will see.
Jill got up suddenly and sat down on Ben's other side, put her arms around him.
Ben, kiss me and stop worrying.
She did not wait, but kissed him. Ben did stop worrying, was lulled into a sensuous glow that left no room for misgivings. Then Mike tightened the arm he still had around Ben's waist and said softly,
We grok closer. Now, Jill?
Now, right here at once. Oh, share water, my darlings.
Ben turned his head and was snatched out of euphoria by utter surprise. Somehow the man from Mars had rid himself of every stitch of clothing. Chapter 33
Well, said Jubal, did you accept the invitation?
Huh? I got out of there fast, grabbed my clothes, ignored the sign, jumped into the bounce tube with my arms full.
You did?
I think if I were Jill, I would be offended.
Caxton turned red. I had to leave, Jubal.
Then what?
Why, I put on my clothes, found I'd forgotten my bag, and didn't go back. In fact, I left so fast I darn near killed myself. You know how the ordinary bounce tube?
I do not.
Uh-huh. Well, if you don't dial it to lift, you sink slowly like cold molasses. But I didn't sink, I fell. 6 stories. When I was about to splash, something caught me. Not a safety net, some sort of field. Scared me silly on top of everything else.
Put not your faith in gadgets. I'll stick to stairs and, when unavoidable, elevators.
Well, the bugs aren't out of that gadget. Duke is safety inspector, but whatever Mike says is gospel to Duke. Mike's got him hypnotized. Hell, he's got them all hypnotized. When the crash comes, it'll be worse than any faulty bounce tube. Jubal, what can we do? I'm worried sick. Harshaw jutted out his lips.
What aspects did you find disquieting?
Huh? All of it.
So, you gave me to think that you enjoyed your visit, up to the point where you behaved like a scared rabbit.
So I did. Mike had me hypnotized, too. Caxton looked puzzled. I might not have snapped out of it if it hadn't been for that odd thing at the last. Jubal, Mike was sitting by me, his arm around me. He couldn't possibly have taken his clothes off. Jubal shrugged.
You were busy. Probably wouldn't have noticed an earthquake.
Oh, piffle, I don't close my eyes like a schoolgirl. How did he do it?
I can't see his relevancy. Or are you suggesting that Mike's nudity shocked you?
I was shocked, all right.
When your own arse was bare, come, sir.
No, no. Jubal, do I have to draw a diagram? I simply have no stomach for group orgies. I almost lost my breakfast. Caxton squirmed. How would you feel if people started acting like monkeys in a cage in the middle of your living room? Jubal fitted his fingers together.
That is the point, Ben. It was not my living room. You go into a man's house, you accept his household rules. That's a universal rule of civilized behavior.
You don't find such behavior shocking?
Ah, you raise another issue. Public displays of rut I find distasteful, but this reflects my early indoctrination. A large part of mankind do not share my taste. The orgy has a very wide history. But shocking. My dear sir, I am shocked only by that which offends me ethically.
You think this is just a matter of taste?
Nothing more. And my taste is no more sacred than the very different taste of Nero. Less sacred, Nero was a god, I am not.
Well, I'll be damned.
Possibly, if damnation is possible. But, Ben, this wasn't public.
Huh?
You told me this group was a plural marriage, a group theogamy, to be technical. Therefore, whatever took place, or was about to take place, you were mealy-mouthed, was not public but private. Ain't nobody here but just us gods. So how could anyone be offended?
I was offended.
Your apotheosis was incomplete. You misled them. You invited it.
Me? Jubal, I did nothing of the sort.
Oh, rats. The time to back out was when you got there. You saw at once that their customs were not yours, but you stayed, enjoyed the favors of one goddess,
behaved as a god toward her. You knew the score, and they knew you knew. Their error lay in accepting your hypocrisy as solid coin. No, Ben. Mike and Jill behaved with propriety. The offense lay in your behavior.
Damn it, Jubal, you twist things. I did get too involved, but when I left, I had to. I was about to throw up.
So you claim reflex. And when over the emotional age of 12 would have clamped his jaws and walked to the bathroom, then returned with some acceptable excuse after things cooled down. It was not reflex. Reflex can empty the stomach. It can't choose a course for feet, recover chattels, take you through doors and cause you to jump down a hole. Panic, Ben. Why did you panic?
Caxton was long in replying. He sighed and said,
I guess when you come down to it, I'm a prude.
Jubal shook his head.
A prude thinks that his own rules of propriety are natural laws. That doesn't describe you. You adjusted to many things that did not fit your code of propriety, whereas a true blue prude would have affronted that delightful tattooed lady and stomped out. Dig deeper.
All I know is that I'm unhappy over the whole thing.
I know you are, Ben, and I'm sorry. Let's try a hypothetical question. You mentioned a lady named Ruth. Suppose Jillian had not been present. Assume that the others were Mike and Ruth and that they offered you the same shared intimacy. Would you have been shocked?
Huh?
Well, yes, it's a shocking situation.
I think so, even though you say it's a matter of taste.
How shocking? Nausea? Panic flight?
Caxton looked sheepish.
Damn you, Jubal.
All right, I would just have found an excuse to go out to the kitchen or something, then left as soon as possible.
Very well, Ben. You have uncovered your trouble.
I have?
What element was changed?
Caxton looked unhappy. At last, he said,
You're right, Jubal. It was because it was Jill. Because I love her. Close, Ben, but not dead center.
Eh?
Love is not the emotion that caused you to flee. What is love, Ben?
What? I'll come off it. Everybody from Shakespeare to Freud has taken a swing at that. Nobody has answered it yet.
All I know is it hurts.
Jubal shook his head.
I'll give you an exact definition. Love is that condition in which the happiness of another person is essential to your own.
Ben said slowly,
I'll buy that, because that's the way I feel about Jill.
Good.
Then you are asserting that your stomach turned and you fled in panic because of a need to make Jill happy.
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't say,
or was it some other emotion?
I simply said...
Caxton stopped.
Okay, I was jealous. But Jubal, I would have sworn I wasn't. I knew I had lost out. I had accepted it long ago. Hell, I didn't like Mike the less for it. Jealousy gets you nowhere.
Nowhere one would wish, certainly. Jealousy is a disease. Love is a healthy condition. The immature mind often mistakes one for the other, or assumes that the greater the love, the greater the jealousy. In fact, they're almost incompatible. One emotion hardly leaves room for the other. Both at once can produce unbearable turmoil. And I grok that was your trouble, Ben. When your jealousy reared its head, you couldn't look it in the eye, so you fled.
It was the circumstances, Jubal. This hands-around harem upsets the hell out of me. Don't misunderstand me. I would love Jill if she were a two-peso whore, which she is not. By her lights, Jill is moral.
Jubal nodded. I know. Jillian has an invincible innocence that makes it impossible for her to be immoral.
He frowned.
Ben, I am afraid that you, and I too, lack the angelic innocence to practice the perfect morality those people live by.
Ben looked startled. You think that sort of thing is moral? I meant that Jill doesn't know she is doing wrong. Mike's got her hornswoggled. And Mike doesn't know it's wrong either. He's the man from Mars. He didn't get a fair start. Jubal frowned.
Yes, I think what those people, the entire nest, not just our kids, are doing, is moral. I haven't examined details, but... Yes, all of it. Bacchanalia, unashamed swapping, communal living, an anarchistic code, everything.
Jubal, you astound me. If you feel that way, why don't you join them? They want you. They'll hold a jubilee. Dawn is waiting to kiss your feet and serve you. I wasn't exaggerating. Jubal sighed.
No. 50 years ago, but now... Ben, my brother, the capacity for such innocence is no longer in me. I've been too long wedded to my own brand of evil and hopelessness to be cleansed in their water of life and become innocent again. If I ever was. Mike thinks you have this innocence. He doesn't call it that. In full measure now. Dawn told me, speaking ex officio. Then I would not disillusion him. Mike sees his own reflection. I am, by profession, a mirror.
Jubal, you're chicken.
Precisely, sir. But my worry is not over their morals. The dangers to them from outside.
Oh, they're in no trouble that way.
You think so? If you dye a monkey pink and shove him into a cage of brown monkeys, they'll tear him to pieces. Those innocents are courting martyrdom. Aren't you being rather melodramatic, Jubal?
Jubal glared.
If I am, sir, does that make my words less weighty? Saints have burned at stakes ere this. Would you dismiss their holy anguish as melodrama?
I didn't mean to get your back up. I simply meant that they aren't in that sort of danger. After all, this isn't the Dark Ages.
Jubal blinked. Really? I hadn't noticed the change. Ben, this pattern has been offered to a naughty world many times, and the world has always crushed it. The Oneida colony was much like Mike's nest. It lasted a while, but out in the country, not many neighbors. Oh, take the early Christians. Anarchy, communism, group marriage, even that kiss of brotherhood. Mike has borrowed a lot from them. If he picked up that kiss of brotherhood from them, I would expect man to kiss man.
Ben looked sheepish. I held out on you. But it's not a pansy gesture.
Nor was it with the early Christians. Do you think I'm a fool?
No comment.
Thank you. I wouldn't advise anyone to offer the kiss of brotherhood to the pastor of some boulevard church today. Primitive Christianity is no more. Over and again, it's been the same sad story. A plan for perfect sharing and perfect love, glorious hopes and high ideals, then persecution and failure.
Jubal sighed again.
I've been fretting about Mike. Now I'm worried about them all.
How do you think I feel? Jubal, I can't accept your sweetness and light theory. What they are doing is wrong.
It's that last incident that sticks in your craw.
Not entirely.
Mostly. Ben, the ethics of sex is a thorny problem. Each of us is forced to grope for a solution he can live with in the face of a preposterous, unworkable, and evil code of so-called morals. Most of us know the code is wrong. Almost everybody breaks it. But we pay Danegeld by feeling guilty and giving lip service. Willy-nilly, the code rides us, dead and stinking, an albatross around the neck. You too, Ben. You fancy yourself a free soul and break that evil code. But faced with a problem in sexual ethics new to you, you tested it against the same Judeo-Christian code. So automatically your stomach did flip-flops, and you think that proves you're right and they're wrong. Faw. I'd as lief use trial by ordeal. All your stomach can reflect is prejudice trained into you before you acquired reason. What about your stomach? Mine is stupid, too, but I don't let it rule my brain. I see the beauty of Mike's attempt to devise an ideal ethic and applaud his recognition that such must start by junking the present sexual code and starting fresh. Most philosophers haven't the courage for this. They swallow the basics of the present code, monogamy, family pattern, continence, body taboos, conventional restrictions on intercourse, and so forth, then fiddle with details, even such piffle as discussing whether the female breast is an obscene sight. But mostly they debate how we can be made to obey this code, ignoring the evidence that most tragedies they see around them are rooted in the code itself, rather than in failure to abide by it. Now comes the man from Mars, looks at this sacrosanct code with a fresh viewpoint, and rejects it. I don't know the details of Mike's code, but it clearly violates laws of every major nation and would outrage right-thinking people of every major faith, and most agnostics and atheists, too. Yet this poor boy, Jubal, he is not a boy. He's a man. Is he a man? This poor ersatz Martian is saying that sex is a way to be happy. Sex should be a means of happiness. Ben, the worst thing about sex is that we use it to hurt each other. It ought never to hurt. It should bring happiness. Or at least pleasure. The code says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. The result? Reluctant chastity, adultery, jealousy, bitterness, blows, and sometimes murder, broken homes and twisted children, and furtive little passes degrading to woman and man. Is this commandment ever obeyed? If a man swore on his own Bible that he refrained from coveting his neighbor's wife because the code forbade it, I would suspect either self-deception or subnormal sexuality. Any man virile enough to sire a child has coveted many women, whether he acts or not. Now comes Mike and says, there's no need to covet my wife. Love her. There's no limit to her love. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose but fear and guilt and hatred and jealousy. The proposition is incredible. So far as I recall, only pre-civilization Eskimos were this naive, and they were so isolated that they were almost men from Mars themselves. But we gave them our virtues, and now they have chastity and adultery just like the rest of us. Ben, what did they gain? I wouldn't care to be an Eskimo. Nor I. Spoiled fish makes me bilious. I had in mind soap and water. I guess I'm a feat. Me too, Ben. I was born in a house with no more plumbing than an igloo. I prefer the present. Nevertheless, Eskimos were invariably described as the happiest people on earth. Any unhappiness they suffered was not through jealousy. They didn't have a word for it. They borrowed spouses for convenience and fun. It did not make them unhappy. So who's loony? Look at this glum world around you, then tell me, did Mike's disciples seem happier or unhappier than other people? I didn't talk to them all, Jubal, but yes, they're happy. So happy they seem slap happy. There's a catch in it somewhere.
Maybe you were the catch.
How? It's a pity your tastes canalized so young. Even 3 days of what you offered would be something to treasure when you reach my age. And you, you young idiot, let jealousy chase you away. At your age, I would have gone Eskimo. Why, I'm so vicariously vexed that my only consolation is the sour certainty that you will regret it. Age does not bring wisdom, Ben, but it does give perspective. And the saddest side of all is to see far behind you temptations you've resisted. I have such regrets. But nothing to the whopper you will suffer. Quit rubbing it in. Heavens, man. Or are you a mouse? I'm trying to goad you. Why are you moaning to an old man when you should be heading for the nest like a homing pigeon? Hell, if I were even 20 years younger, I'd join Mike's church myself. Lay off, Jubal. What do you really think of Mike's church? You said it was just a discipline. Yes and no. It is supposed to be truth with a capital T, as Mike got it from the Martian old ones.
The old ones, eh? To me, they're hogwash.
Mike believes in them. Ben, I once knew a manufacturer who believed that he consulted the ghost of Alexander Hamilton. However, damn it, why must I be the devil's advocate? What's biting you now? Ben, the foulest sinner of all is the hypocrite who makes a racket of religion. But we must give the devil his due. Mike does believe. And is teaching the truth as he sees it. As for his old ones, I don't know that they don't exist. I simply find the idea hard to swallow. As for his Thou Art God creed, it is neither more nor less credible than any other. Come Judgment Day, if they hold it, we may find that Mumbo Jumbo, the god of the Congo, was big boss all along. Oh, for heaven's sake, Jubal. All names belong in the hat, Ben. Man is so built that he cannot imagine his own death. This leads to endless invention of religions. While this conviction by no means proves immortality to be a fact, questions generated by it are overwhelmingly important. The nature of life, how ego hooks into the body, the problem of ego itself, and why each ego seems to be the center of the universe. The purpose of life, the purpose of the universe, these are paramount questions. Ben, they can never be trivial. Science hasn't solved them. And who am I to sneer at religions for trying, no matter how unconvincingly to me? Old Mumbo Jumbo may eat me yet. I can't rule him out because he owns no fancy cathedrals, nor can I rule out one God-struck boy leading a sex cult in an upholstered attic. He might be the Messiah. The only religious opinion I feel sure of is this. Self-awareness is not just a bunch of amino acids bumping together. Phew, Jubal, you should have been a preacher. Missed it by luck. If Mike can show us a better way to run this fouled-up planet, his sex life needs no vindication.
Geniuses are justifiably contemptuous of lesser opinion and always indifferent to sexual customs of the tribe. They make their own rules. Mike is a genius, so he ignores Mrs. Grundy and diddles to suit himself.
But from a theological standpoint, Mike's sexual behavior is as orthodox as Santa Claus. He preaches that all living creatures are collectively God, which makes Mike and his disciples the only self-aware gods on this planet, which rates him union card by all the rules for godding. Those rules always permit God's sexual freedom, limited only by their own judgment. You want proof? Leda and the swan, Europa and the bull, Osiris, Isis, and Horus? The incredible incests of the Norse gods? I won't cite Eastern religions. Their gods do things that a mink breeder wouldn't tolerate. But look at the relations of the Trinity and One, of the most widely respected Western religion. The only way that religion's precepts can be reconciled with the inner relations of what purports to be a monotheos is by concluding that breeding rules for deity are not the rules for mortals. But most people never think about it. They seal it off and mark it holy, do not disturb. One must allow Mike any dispensation granted other gods. One god alone splits into at least two parts and breeds. Not just Jehovah, they all do it. A group of gods will breed like rabbits, and with as little regard for human proprieties. Once Mike entered the godding business, orgies were as predictable as sunrise. So forget the standards of Podunk and judge them by Olympian morals.
Tubal glowered.
Ben, to understand this, you must start by conceding their sincerity.
Oh, I do. It's just that, do you? You start by assuming that they must be wrong, judging them by that very code you reject. Try logic instead. Ben, this growing closer by sexual union, this plurality into unity, logically has no place for monogamy. Since shared by all sexual congress is basic to this creed, a fact that your account makes crystal clear, why expect it to be hidden? One hides what one is ashamed of. But they are not ashamed. They glory in it. To duck behind closed doors would be a sop to the very code they have rejected. Or it would shout aloud that you were an outsider who should never have been admitted in the first place.
Maybe I shouldn't have been. Obviously you shouldn't have been. Mike clearly had misgivings. But Jillian insisted. Eh?
That only makes it worse.
How? She wanted you to be one of them, in all fullness, as Mike would say. She loves you, and is not jealous of you. But you are jealous of her, and while you claim to love her, your behavior doesn't show it.
Damn it, I do love her!
So, as may be, you clearly did not understand the Olympian honor you were being offered.
I guess I didn't, Ben conceded glumly.
I'm going to offer you a way out. You wondered how Mike got rid of his clothes. I'll tell you.
How?
A miracle.
Oh, for God's sake.
Could be. $1,000 says it was a miracle.
Go ask Mike. Get him to show you.
Then send me the money.
Hell, Jubal, I don't want to take your money.
You won't. Bet.
Jubal, you go see what the score is.
I can't go back. They'll take you back with open arms and never ask why you left. $1,000 on that prediction, too.
Ben, you were there less than 24 hours. Did you give them the careful investigation that you give something smelly in public life before you blast it?
But did you?
No, but, oh, for God's sake, Ben, you claim to love Jill, yet you won't give her the fair shake you give a crooked politician. Not a tenth the effort she made to help you when you were in trouble.
Where would you be if she had made so feeble a try?
Roasting in hell, most likely. You're bitching about friendly fornication. Do you know what I'm worried about?
What?
Christ was crucified for preaching without a police permit. Sweat over that instead.
Caxton chewed a thumb and said nothing. Then stood up suddenly.
I'm on my way. After lunch. Now.
24 hours later, Ben wired Jubal $2,000. When, after a week, Jubal received no other message, he sent a stat, care of Ben's office. What the hell are you doing? The answer was somewhat delayed. Studying Martian. Aqua fraternally yours, Ben. Part 5. His Happy Destiny.
Chapter 34.
Foster looked up from work in progress.
Junior?
Sir.
That youngster you wanted? He's available now. The Martians have released him.
Digby looked puzzled.
I'm sorry. There was some young creature toward whom I have a duty?
Foster smiled angelically. Miracles were never necessary. In truth, the pseudo-concept miracle was self-contradicting.
But these young fellows always had to learn it for themselves.
Never mind, he said gently. It's a minor martyrdom, and I'll guard it myself.
And, Junior?
Sir.
Call me Foz, please. Ceremony is all right in the field, but we don't need it in the studio. And remind me not to call you Junior. You made a very nice record on that temporary duty assignment. Which name do you like to be called?
His assistant blinked.
I have another name?
Thousands. Do you have a preference?
Why, I really don't recall it this eon.
Well, would you like to be called Digby?
Yes. That's a very nice name. Thanks. Don't thank me. You earned it.
Archangel Foster turned back to his work, not forgetting the minor duty he had assumed. Briefly, he considered how this cup might be taken from little Patricia, then chided himself for such unprofessional, almost human thought. Mercy was not possible in an angel. Angelic compassion left no room for it. The Martian Old Ones had reached an elegant trial solution to their major aesthetic problem and put it aside for a few filled threes to let it generate new problems, at which time, unhurriedly and almost absent-mindedly, the alien nestling which they had returned to his proper world was tapped of what he had learned of his people and dropped after cherishing, since he was of no further interest to their purposes. They took the data he had accumulated and, with a view to testing that trial solution, began to work toward considering an inquiry leading to an investigation of aesthetic parameters involved in the possibility of the artistic necessity of destroying Earth. But much waiting would be before fullness would grok decision. The Daibutsu at Kamakura was again washed by a giant wave secondary to a seismic disturbance 280 kilometers off Honshu. The wave killed 13,000 people and lodged a male infant high in the Buddha's image interior, where it was found and succored by surviving monks. This infant lived 97 Terran years after the disaster that wiped out his family and produced no progeny nor anything of note aside from a reputation for sustained belching. Cynthia Duchess entered a nunnery with all benefits of modern publicity and left without fanfare 3 days later. Ex-Secretary General Douglas suffered a stroke which impaired the use of his left hand, but not his ability to conserve assets entrusted to him. Lunar Enterprises Limited published a prospectus on a bond issue for the wholly-owned subsidiary Ares Chandler Corporation. The Lyle Drive exploratory vessel Mary Jane Smith landed on Pluto. Fraser, Colorado, reported the coldest February of its recorded history. Bishop Oxtongue at the new Grand Avenue Temple preached on the text, Matthew 24:24. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. He made clear that his diatribe did not refer to Mormons, Christian Scientists, Roman Catholics, nor Fosterites, especially not the last, nor to any fellow travelers whose good works counted more than inconsequential differences in creed or ritual, but solely to upstart heretics who were seducing faithful contributors away from the faiths of their fathers. In a subtropical resort city in the same nation, three complainants swore on information charging public lewdness on the part of a pastor, three of his assistants, and John Doe, Mary Rowe et al., plus charges of running a disorderly house and contributing to delinquency of minors. The county attorney had no interest in prosecuting, as he had on file a dozen like it. Complaining witnesses always failed to appear at arraignment. He pointed this out. Their spokesman said, "You'll have plenty of backing this time. Supreme Bishop Short is determined that this Antichrist shall flourish no longer." The prosecutor was not interested in Antichrists, but there was a primary coming up.
"Well, just remember, I can't do much without backing."
"You'll have it."
Dr. Jubal Harshaw was not aware of this incident, but knew of too many others for peace of mind. He had succumbed to that most insidious vice, the news. Thus far, he had merely subscribed to a clipping service instructed for Man from Mars, V.M. Smith, Church of All Worlds, and Ben Caxton. But the monkey was on his back. Twice lately, he fought off an impulse to order Larry to set up the babble box. Damn it, why couldn't those kids tape him an occasional letter, instead of letting him worry?
Front.
Anne came in, but he continued to stare out at snow and an empty swimming pool. Anne, he said, rent us a tropical atoll and put this mausoleum up for sale.
Yes, boss.
But get a lease before you hand this back to the Indians. I will not put up with hotels. How long has it been since I wrote pay copy?
43 days.
Let that be a lesson to you. Begin. Death Song of a Woods Colt. The depths of winter longing are ice within my heart. The shards of broken covenants lie sharp against my soul. The wraiths of long-lost ecstasy still keep us two apart. The sullen winds of bitterness still keen from turn to pole. The scars and twisted tendons, the stumps of struck-off limbs, the aching pit of hunger and throb of unset bone, my sanded, burning eyeballs, as light within them dims, add nothing to the torment of lying here alone. The shimmering flames of fever trace out your blessed face. My broken eardrums echo, yet your voice inside my head. I do not fear the darkness that comes to me apace. I only dread the loss of you that comes when I am dead.
There,
he added briskly. Sign it Louisa M. Alcott and send it to Togetherness Magazine.
Boss, is that your idea of pay copy?
Huh? It will be worth something later. Put it on file, and my literary executor can use it to help settle death duties. That's the catch in artistic pursuits. The best work is worth most after the workman can't be paid. The literary life, dreck. It consists in scratching the cat till it purrs.
Poor Jubal. Nobody ever feels sorry for him. So he has to feel sorry for himself.
Sarcasm yet. No wonder I don't get any work done.
Not sarcasm, boss. Only the wearer knows where the shoe pinches.
My apologies. All right, here's pay copy. Title, One for the Road. There's amnesia in a hangknot and comfort in the axe, but the simple way of poison will make your nerves relax. There's surcease in a gunshot and sleep that comes from racks, but a handy draft of poison avoids the harshest tax. You find rest upon the hot squat, or gas can give you packs, but the closest corner chemist has peace in packaged stacks. There's refuge in the church lot when you tire of facing facts, and the smoothest route is poison prescribed by kindly quacks. Chorus. With an ugh and a groan and a kick of the heels, death comes quiet or it comes with squeals, but the pleasantest place to find your end is a cup of cheer from the hand of a friend.
Jubal, Anne said worriedly, is your stomach upset?
Always.
That's for file, too?
Huh? That's for the New Yorker.
They'll bounce it.
They'll buy it. It's morbid. They'll buy it.
And besides, there's something wrong with the scansion.
Of course, you have to give an editor something to change. Or he gets frustrated. After he pees in it, he likes the flavor better, so he buys it. My dear, I was avoiding honest work before you were born. Don't teach Grandpa how to suck eggs. Or would you rather I nursed Abby while you turn out copy? Hey, it's Abigail's feeding time. You want front. Dorcas is front.
It won't hurt Abby to wait. Dorcas is lying down. Morning sickness.
Nonsense. Anne, I can spot pregnancy 2 weeks before a rabbit can, and you know it.
Jubal, you let her be. She's scared she didn't catch, and she wants to think she did as long as possible. Don't you know anything about women?
Come to think about it, no. All right, I won't heckle her. Why didn't you bring our baby angel and nurse her here?
I'm glad I didn't. She might have understood what you were saying.
So I corrupt babies, do I?
She's too young to see the marshmallow syrup underneath, boss. But you don't do any work if I bring her. You just play with her.
Can you think of a better way of enriching empty hours?
Jubal, I appreciate the fact that you are dotty over my daughter. I think she's pretty nice myself. But you've been spending all your time either playing with Abby or moping.
How soon do we go on relief?
That's not the point. If you don't crank out stories, you get spiritually constipated. It's reached the point where Dorcas and Larry and I are biting our nails. When you yell front, we jitter with relief, but it's always a false alarm.
If there's money to meet the bills, what are you worried about?
What are you worried about, boss?
Jubal considered it. Should he tell her? Any doubts as to the paternity of Abigail had been settled in his mind in her naming. Anne had wavered between Abigail and Zenobia, then had loaded the infant with both. Anne never mentioned the meanings of those names. Presumably she did not know that he knew them. Anne went on firmly.
You're not fooling anyone, Jubal. Dorcas and Larry and I all know that Mike can take care of himself, but you've been so frenetic about it.
Frenetic? Me?
Larry set up the tank in his room, and one of us has been catching the news every broadcast. Not because we are worried, except about you. But when Mike gets into the news, and of course he does, we know it before the silly clippings reach you. I wish you would quit reading them.
How do you know about any clippings? I went to a lot of trouble to see that you didn't.
Boss, she said in a tired voice.